It didn't look anything like a dog or cat. Its color was orange, and its eyes glowed. As soon as I got a good look at it, I gunned the motor up and got out of there.
The San Antonio Star, June 19th, 1977.
Welcome to the Oddity Archive with Evan and David. Welcome back to the Oddity Archive. Evan, how are you doing, sir?
Honestly, my brain is a little fried. I've been doing a lot of travel for work. How about you?
Not a whole lot. We did have a pretty exciting event occur at work last month.
Okay.
I don't know how into basketball you are, but you've probably heard of March Madness.
Yeah.
That happened last month. The team that I'm on at work, we did an ultimate snack bracket.
Oh, okay. I won't make you give me the full 32 snacks, or was it a full bracket?
We did 16.
Okay.
We picked the 16 most popular snacks in America. Mm-hmm. You know, I put a couple of my own in there just because, you know, I wanted them to win. And then each day of the week, we whittled it down until we had our championship round. Do you want to take just fully blind?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can utilize some remote viewing techniques.
Ooh, yep. Okay.
See if you can view what the winner was.
Okay.
Take as much time as you need.
I'm rubbing my temples to really dial in on the snack. Oh, nope. I have it.
Okay.
Circus peanuts.
What is wrong with you?
Do they still make those? Do you know what a circus peanut is?
Yes, I know what circus
peanut is. The orange styrofoam you would get on Halloween. And then you're like, have you been to the store recently? And where did you find these?
I'm not going to lie.
Oh, you like those?
No, I hate those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But based on how our remote viewing episode went, there was, you know, an ounce of me that got really excited that you were about to remote view. So why don't you actually give it a try? See if you can tell what the winner was.
Okay. All right.
I'm gonna also, while you're doing that, mentally send it to you.
I'll do it for real. I'll get a real shot.
I don't know if that's even a technique, but I'm gonna do it.
Yeah. Send me your snack vibe here, and I'll try and dial in.
Okay.
Your snack frequency, we'll call it.
Yeah. I'm sending the frequency now.
Okay. Is it sweet and salty, no. Savory,
so
all the things?
Savory snacks.
Okay. So no candy.
No candy. Savory snacks.
No circus peanuts.
No okay. Circus peanuts.
So like chips, pretzels, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I'm going to go with chips and salsa.
There's no salsa. It's just like.
Maybe I'm just hungry.
I think maybe you're just hungry. So
is that not a snack? Oh, so it's like singular item.
Would chips and salsa, would that move from snack into dish?
Or appetizer.
Appetizer.
Okay. I'm messing this up.
So
let me try one more time.
Here's what I want you to do yeah. for the final round of this, and then we'll move on. Mm-hmm. I want you to put yourself on the snack aisle, the chip aisle of the grocery store.
Okay.
Okay. It's just something you grab off the shelf and you purchase and you eat. Okay. So go there, move yourself.
And crackers are off the table.
What's that?
Crackers are off the table. Purely the chip.
I'll give that up. I don't think there were any crackers involved, but
there's at least one.
Yeah, there's at least one cracker involved.
okay, so chip aisle,
not crackers.
At this rate, you're gonna be like, it's a flavor of Dorito, Evan. It's just a flavor
of
Dorito.
Something that is on the chip aisle.
Okay,
that is what I will tell you.
Yeah.
So focus. I'm sending it to you. I think you're getting it.
Mm-hmm. Salt and vinegar chips.
That is a good guess. Incorrect, though.
Okay.
The winner was Crunchy Cheetos.
Crunchy Cheetos?
Yeah.
Is that just regular Cheetos? Oh, because they have the air puffed or whatever they call them.
Yeah. Crunchy versus puffy Cheetos. I don't know why any human likes puffy Cheetos. Crunchy Cheetos won.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
The runner-up was Cool Ranch Doritos.
I was feeling some Dorito vibe
You even mentioned Doritos.
I start with tortilla, so tortilla and Dorito. I was getting there. As you slowly pushed me to the right, part of the chip aisle. Yeah.
If we went one more round, I was going to be like, Chester Cheetah.
I didn't know Cheetos still had that kind of draw.
Have you had a crunchy Cheeto lately?
No. But also, I think Flamin' Hot superior. Or they have the jalapeno. Jalapeno Cheeto
is the best
Cheeto. Is the superior Cheeto. Yeah.
Absolutely. Hands down.
We can agree on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready to jump from snacks to paranormal?
Before we do.
Okay.
What were you hoping would win in the bracket?
I was team crunchy Cheetos. I was team crunchy Cheetos the whole way.
You were team Cheeto. Okay. Yeah. Now that I know your favorite snack, now I think we can get into it.
Okay. So today we're going to be talking about the Dover Demon.
Okay.
Ever heard of the Dover Demon?
I haven't. Dover sounds like a place, if I had to make a guess.
It is a place. So most of the time, and even myself, before I started really researching this, I was thinking Dover, Delaware. That's probably the most well-known in America.
That's a place in Delaware?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know Delaware very well.
Yeah, Dover, Delaware.
At this point, they're like, does he know America at all? Someone's like, do you go through New Jersey to get to New York?
My favorite part of the Jersey Devil episode is when we both confidently said that the pilgrims landed in Pennsylvania.
Which I still don't know. I didn't bother learning about it after the fact.
Yeah, so I'm going to put a note in that episode.
Is that not right?
No, they landed in Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Pennsylvania is not even on the water. Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
And on the ocean.
Yeah, I'm going to have to put a note in that thing that's like, yeah, our geography is terrible. Just ignore it.
Our subscriber count is dropping as we speak.
Yeah, all 17 of them are just like. Yeah.
My sister and your sister are out. Okay, so Dover, but not Delaware.
Not Delaware. We're going to Dover, Massachusetts.
Is that where the pilgrims landed? Sorry.
So this is going to take place in 1977.
Okay.
Dover, Massachusetts. Population at that time was 4,500.
Oh, so not a very big town. Yeah.
Small town. It's about 30, 40-minute drive southwest of Boston.
Okay.
And the only other thing, for what it's worth, is it was and is the wealthiest town in Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
The median income is like today is like $250,000.
Oh, so still to this day, it's a very like affluent town.
Yeah, still to this day. And it was back then, wealthiest town in Massachusetts. I think I read somewhere that any lot that is sold in Dover, Massachusetts has to be at least an acre.
The picture I have in my head is big home on like big plot of land.
Yeah. And it's a very wooded area for what it's worth. So the homes are pretty, you know, separated from one another.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to jump right into this. And I think for me, the interesting part about the Dover Demon is actually the scarcity of it. Because you'll see this story is very quick. The entire story takes place over probably right around 24 hours.
Okay.
But it has left quite an impact on that community and this area.
Okay.
So we're going to go to April 21st, 1977. It's about 10 p.m. And again, checking in on moon phases.
Got to.
We are 3 days past the new moon. And I actually learned something new today about moon phases.
You're going deep, man. You're going deep.
I'm going deep. The whole world has the same moon phase on any given day.
Okay.
Like if you see a full moon, someone in Mongolia had a full moon too. I don't know why, but I always thought that like the moon phase changes based on where you are on the earth, but that's like totally wrong.
When you said it, I'm like, yeah, okay. But if somebody had asked me in like a quiz, I'd be like, oh.
No moon phases. So yeah, we're 3 days past a new moon, which means it's very dark.
Yeah.
There's barely any moon showing. In steps Bill Bartlett. Bill Bartlett is 17 years old. He's a high schooler. It is spring break in Dover, Massachusetts at this time. And Bill Bartlett is riding around with a few of his friends in the car. They're bored. They said that they were looking for something to do. And when asked after what's about to happen. You know, had y'all been drinking? Mm-hmm. Were there any drugs involved? He said, no, we hadn't been. We were probably looking for it.
All right, fair.
So he's owning that. We're trying to find a party.
Yeah.
So they're driving down the road, driving down Farm Street. He said he was going about 40 miles an hour when he spots in the distance on a rock wall some eye shine. You know how animals like cats and owls and other animals, like if you shine a light at them just right, you get that eye shine back.
Yeah, I've got two cats and even in a dark room, if they just kind of catch the light the right way, you'll see a little glimmer of light in there.
Yeah. So he notices some of that on top of a rock wall sort of down the road. And if you look at it, because I went on Google Maps onto Farm Street and sort of like went up and down it mm-hmm. just to get an idea of what this looked like.
Yeah.
It's mostly forested area. And then where a ditch would be on one side is just like a 3 foot tall, really old rock wall.
This is human built?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I was picturing like carved out of rock or something.
Oh, no. Human built rock wall.
Gotcha.
So he notices there's some eye shine coming from on top of the rock wall, catches his attention. And then he continues driving. And when he comes up on it, he notices that it's some sort of unusual creature. And the description he gives is that it was about 4 feet tall. The eyes were glowing orange. It had no nose or mouth. It had long, thin fingers and a watermelon-shaped head. He said it looked like a kid with a distended body.
Okay.
So he notices this perched on top of the rock wall as he's driving by it.
4 foot tall, glowing orange eyes, no nose or mouth, watermelon-shaped head.
And long, thin fingers.
Okay.
Yeah. So he said driving about 40 miles an hour, the whole incident took place between two utility poles. Not even 10 seconds, right?
Yeah.
Real quick, glimpses this thing, and he freaks out. What in the world did I just see?
Yeah.
I have no idea what that was. He tells his friends that are in the car, presumably they were looking out another window or something. Countless numbers of times I've been driving somewhere and seen, I don't know. I feel like if you pass a cow, you have to point out cow, right?
And the whole car is like, woo!
Yeah. Woo! But also countless number of times I've been like, hey, do you see that? And the passenger is like, what are you talking about? And then the opportunity has passed and you're already past it. So something to that extent happens with the friends. They don't see it.
He didn't bother to turn around?
Well, so friends don't see it. And he's freaking out. He's like, how did you not see that thing? There was a weird creature on top of the rock wall. Why weren't you looking at it? You should have seen this thing. And so being teenage boys, they start egging him on to turn around so they can get a look at it.
Yeah.
Right. And he's freaking out. He's like, I don't want to do this again. That thing was scary. I don't want to see it again. But they egg him on and he gives into the peer pressure, turns the car around, goes back to where he saw it. It's gone. And his friends convince him to stop the car. They roll the windows down. His friends are like shouting out the windows, like, come back. We want to see you. Get back here. But nothing happens. So he very quickly at this point, he's like, I don't care about a party. I'm not trying to find a beer right now. Like, I'm freaked out. So he goes, drops his friends off at their houses. Mm-hmm. And then he goes immediately home and draws a picture of what he saw.
Okay.
And you should know that Bill Bartlett, he was into art. He was an artist. Today, he's a fine artist. You can find it online if you know where to look. But, you know, even when he was 17.
That was his thing.
So he goes home immediately and draws it. And this is, I think, the first no context picture that I sent you is a picture of a creature on top of a rock wall.
As usual, I like to bring it up just to remind
bring it
myself.
Up. Give us your impression on it.
It kind of looks like you're a little bit like an alien almost, but its head kind of reminds me of a camel mixed with like a frog body.
Okay. Camel head, frog body.
Does that check out?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, it looks amphibious to a certain degree.
Okay.
Yeah. The eyes look pretty big.
It's hairless.
The head's kind of like a watermelon, but a misshapen one. Not one I'm bringing home. yeah, but I got a good picture now.
Okay. And I think it's on that picture, but you probably can't read it. He draws the picture and then he writes, "I, Bill Bartlett, swear on a stack of Bibles that I saw this creature."
I do see that, yes. He's also got a note on here. It's like skin texture, and like he jotted down some proper detail on this thing.
Yeah, he did a lot more than just your random 17-year-old trying to draw what he just saw.
One hopes that he's an artist. Like, he's got a little bit more of a ability to capture what he saw. Yeah,
exactly. So that is the first sighting. That happens at about 10 p.m. at night. And then fast forward to about midnight. Mm-hmm. So now we're at midnight, and John Baxter is leaving his girlfriend's house.
Okay.
He says, "Bye-bye, Catherine. I'm going home." So he leaves Catherine's house, and he starts walking down Miller Hill Road. And again, I looked at, you know, the Google outlook on this.
Yeah.
Miller Hill Road is... it's not a neighborhood street because it's just one road coming off of Farm Street.
Okay.
But it's lined with houses.
Okay.
But, you know, there's space between the houses because it's an affluent area. They have big lots, that kind of stuff.
So it's a main road to still get through town, but...
no, it's solely to get to these houses.
Oh, okay. So it's like a side street that's only for these homes.
Yeah, it ends in a dead end.
Okay.
I just don't want to paint the picture that he's like walking down a busy road. He's walking down like at midnight, what should be an abandoned road.
Gotcha.
That everybody in the houses is just asleep.
Yeah. And super safe area in theory without demons.
Right.
So not like a sketchy walk to make.
Yeah. It shouldn't be a sketchy walk. Also, I feel like in the 70s, people were... way looser about just walking places and hitchhiking and doing all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So he leaves his girlfriend's house at the very south end of Miller Hill Road.
Okay.
And it connects to Farm Street about a mile and a quarter north.
So not too far from the first sighting, it sounds like, right?
Not too far from the first sighting. So he's walking down the road on his way home, and it says about 30 minutes later, he's about a mile down the road. I guess he's a very slow walker. So he gets about a mile down the road, and he sees someone approaching him.
Okay.
Again, it's a dark night. Mm-hmm. There's no moon. There's no street lights along this street. He sees someone approaching him. He notices that they're very short and look kind of odd. And what I was able to... let me start over. I got to phrase this the right way. So he notices that this person approaching him is very short and kind of shaped oddly. And from what I read, he, because of this description, he assumed it was his friend MG, which part of me just hopes that he saw an opportunity in when he was telling this story to just take a dig at
roast
one of
his
friends.
Buddy.
Yeah.
MG's reading the newspaper the next day like, "Oh, dude, come on."
So he says, "I thought it was my friend MG. MG lives on that street."
For how few people live on the street because it's so spread out, small town, you would probably recognize somebody if you knew them, like, approaching down the road.
Yeah.
Especially this time of night, we're going to be like, "Oh, who else is out here?"
Yeah, who else is out this time of night walking down this road?
Right.
So he kind of rightfully assumes, like, "Oh, it's my friend, MG." I guess MG was very short and misshapen. So he then calls out, "MG, hey, it's me. What are you up to?" And at this point, the person approaching him just stops. Notices him noticing it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they sort of have like a quick little standoff where neither one of them is moving. They're both kind of staring at each other. Mm-hmm. And then John Baxter takes a step forward, at which point the person or the creature, whatever this is.
Or MG. We haven't ruled that out yet.
Or MG takes off running off the road. And where it was is there's kind of a slope down. Mm-hmm. And so the creature runs down this slope, and John Baxter, having absolutely zero survival instinct, chases after it.
Okay. Now that sounds like rural places are like, "I gotta get to the bottom of this. I'm gonna chase that dangerous thing into the woods."
So he chases it down the slope. And once he gets down there, he notices a silhouette about 30 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
So fairly close.
Yeah. But new moon and it's dark. So
yeah, new moon, dark silhouette. And he gets about 30 feet away and he says the creature is sort of just in a, I guess, a paralyzed position. It's in a position and it's just stopped.
I'm picturing like when you have headlights on a deer and it just kind of locks up.
Yeah, like not moving an inch. And he said that the feet, the creature's feet were sort of molded around the rocks at the base of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of was leaning onto a tree and it had long, thin fingers that were wrapped around the trunk of the tree.
Okay.
He said it looked like a monkey, but it had a figure eight shaped head. I don't know why you wouldn't just say hourglass. Because when I first heard that, I was like, it had two holes in its head.
Or like a really, really thin middle part.
Yeah. Right? So he says figure eight shaped head, and it starts looking straight at him. So it's kind of paused, but then it kind of turns its head to look straight at him.
So description-wise, a lot of overlap with our buddy Bill Bartlett.
Yeah.
Do they know each other? Do we know?
So I'll get through. We got one more to go through, and okay, then we'll talk about that. But you're on the right track. So at this point, after he's chased it down, he's 30 feet away from it. Once it turns its head to look at him from this otherwise paralyzed position, that is when John Baxter's fear response kicks in. And he's finally like, hold on, wait a minute. I need to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes off. He runs back up the slope, books it down to the intersection with Farm Street, and hitchhikes a ride with a couple driving by that takes him home.
Yeah.
And so he also, I'm not sure if he did this immediately or maybe the next day, but he also drew a picture of what he saw. And that's the second picture that I sent you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Yeah, I mean, clearly plenty of overlap with Bill Bartlett, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they look fairly similar, right?
The only thing kind of missing is just like some skin detail and stuff. But again, he was kind of seeing the silhouette, but the like outlying shape and hands and most of the description definitely aligns.
So that happens. Everybody gets back to their houses, goes to sleep, wakes up the next day. It's still spring break. And then the following night, April 22nd, 1977,
mm-hmm,
Abby Bradham, she is riding home with her boyfriend after dark. She's driving. And guess what? She spots something in the headlights on the left side of the road.
What was it?
She gets closer and she says some sort of creature crouched on all fours and it's facing the car.
Okay.
What she was able to gather from it, because she had a similar incident as Bill Bartlett with the first sighting.
Yeah, yeah.
She described it as having a thin monkey-like body and a large oblong head. It had no nose, no ears, and no mouth. It was hairless, and it had tan or beige skin.
Did her boyfriend?
He did not see it.
Okay. So very similar to Bill Bartlett.
Yeah. She also said that it had green eye shine.
Instead of orange.
So Bill Bartlett claimed orange.
Yeah.
She said it had a green eye shine. So those three sightings happen.
Okay.
Those are the only three sightings ever of the Dover Demon. This is not something that has come back up from time to time that people go hunting for the Dover Demon. Like with the Jersey Devil, there's been sightings, you know,
yeah,
all over the place.
So, I mean, locally, did this thing have legs? Like, did people keep an eye out for it or was it just kind of written off?
So they told their friends about it at school and stuff like that. But none of the three of them went out of their way,
mm-hmm,
to like make a big deal about this. But, you know, word gets out.
Yeah.
If a strange creature is seen, people are going to want to know about that. It's going to be an exciting story.
Especially for, I mean, this area, their school is probably pretty small, I would guess. So
yeah,
them spreading this story with their fellow students, that's enough for it to be a bigger thing in this kind of small town.
Yeah. And now is a good time to point out that these three folks, they knew of each other because it's such a small town and they all go to the same school, mm-hmm. but they were not friends. They didn't hang out. They weren't in the same clique.
Oh, okay.
They didn't associate with one another. So they knew of each other just by virtue of it being such a small school.
Because Bill Bartlett and John Baxter both like drew pictures of this event. I figured maybe they're both like in art class together or something like that. So maybe some overlap, even if they're not, you know, best buds.
I think John Baxter was 15 years old at this sighting and Abby Bradham was 17, the same as Bill Bartlett, if that's relevant at all. But yeah, so they didn't know each other. They all had these incidents completely separate from one another. And they go to school and like I said, they're telling their friends. People are starting to hear about this, but it's not like there's no panic. There's no, we got to figure out what this is or anything like that. It's just kind of a, you know, hey, they saw something weird at this point.
So knowing that and like kind of how small scale that town is, like what made this story carry on outside the boundaries of just that town?
So 6 days later, 6 days after Abby sees the creature on the side of the road, April 28th, 1977, a gentleman named Lauren Coleman. He lives in Needham, which is a town just outside of Dover, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And he comes into Dover to do some shopping, go to some stores. And Lauren Coleman happens to be one of the most influential people ever in the world of cryptozoology.
Oh,
he just happens to live just a town over. If you had a Mount Rushmore of cryptozoology people, scientists, researchers, nobody would question him being on there.
Is he still around today?
He is still around today. When he was doing this work in 1977, he was about 30 years old.
Oh, okay. Wow. He got in early.
He got in early. Cryptozoology wasn't a thing until like the mid to late 50s, I believe.
Okay.
Like nobody researched or studied unknown creatures as a field of study until then. And so it's a very new thing that people are into. And Lauren Coleman was one of the founding fathers of this whole movement.
Okay.
So he's visiting Dover and goes to a couple stores. One of the cashiers there knows who he is, knows what he does, has heard the story about what these kids saw, and is like, hey, you know, this is your kind of line of work. You know, we had some kids see something a little bit odd last week, and they drew some pictures of it. You should go check out these pictures. So Lauren Coleman does exactly that.
Yeah.
He goes and interviews the witnesses, sees the pictures, and this is when he coins the term Dover Demon.
Okay.
Prior to Lauren Coleman coming in and getting involved in the case, the creature didn't have a name. There was no title to it.
Yeah.
So he coins the term Dover Demon. And being who he is and the line of work that he does, he's like, I need to investigate this a little bit further. Mm-hmm. And so he brings in some of his friends. He brings in Ed Fogg. He is the head of public relations for the Massachusetts Rhode Island UFO Study Group.
Ed Fogg?
Ed Fogg. F-O-G-G.
That's a good name for working in that field. That is a good name.
He brings in Walter Webb.
Are these real people?
These are real people. Walter Webb, an assistant director at the Hayden Planetarium at Boston's Science Museum.
Okay.
And he brings in Joseph Nyman, who is a member of MUFON. And if you remember,
oh yeah,
from Aerial School UFO, MUFON. So
see, I'm slowly becoming a cryptid expert myself.
So he brings in three UFO alien people.
Yeah.
And so you alluded to, it sounds kind of alien-ish.
Yeah.
When you were looking at the picture or after I gave you the description or something.
If you saw an alien like crawling around on all fours, it's kind of got that vibe.
Yeah. And so Lauren Coleman kind of went down the same road. This is some sort of humanoid. It's making me think alien. So let me bring in some UFO folks.
Yeah.
So he kind of does like a team assemble situation and they all show up in Dover, Massachusetts, and they just go around and start interviewing everybody they can. They interview all the kids' parents. Bill Bartlett's parents said that he's a very honest and open kid. He's not a prankster. This wouldn't be in his nature to like come up with a story and just try and shock people with it or anything. Mm-hmm. John Baxter's parents said that he wasn't one to just make up stories. His dad did say he was very open that John does like science fiction and he writes some science fiction, but at no point did he question John's honesty about all of this. And John Baxter was open about liking science fiction. He wasn't like trying to hide the fact that he's into science fiction.
Don't come in. I'm reading. Yeah.
He was like, yeah, like I like science fiction, right? I don't think that's immediately
disqualifying or anything.
Disqualifying, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I would like to imagine that if I finally succeeded in getting abducted by aliens, that yeah. when I told people my story, they wouldn't be like, oh, well, you run that podcast. So, like, of course you're lying
of
about
course
this for fame, right?
Yeah.
Abby's parents, her mom is like, yeah, I believe her. I think she's telling the truth. And her dad, just being a father, her dad is like, no, she saw some sort of animal.
Yeah. Yeah.
They interview Alice Stewart. Alice Stewart is the owner of the land that John Baxter's sighting happened on. So, where the creature ran off the road and like down a slope and he chased after it. She reported that she didn't see or hear anything unusual that night, and she said her dogs were inside and so they wouldn't have been alerted or start acting up or anything. You know, maybe if this creature had run through the yard and her dogs were outside, they would have started barking and all that stuff,
right?
This team interviews Carl Sheridan. He's the police chief. And Carl Sheridan says he's not familiar with the other two, but he does know Bill Bartlett, and he describes him as a great artist, a reliable kid. He believes his witness testimony. He believes what Bill Bartlett is saying.
There isn't much doubt on them seeing something.
Right, right. They interview Richard Wakely. He is the high school principal, and he's quoted as, "I don't think these kids got together and invented it." He said none of the three were troublemakers. They were all fairly average students. So
is that good or bad? Yeah, right. They all got straight C's, yeah. But I trust them.
Yeah. And then they interview Robert Linton, who is a science teacher at the high school. And Robert Linton says that after they saw the stuff, before Lauren Coleman got involved, he had overheard Bartlett telling a friend about the incident. And so he sort of independently pulled Bartlett to the side and was like, "What's going on? What are you doing here?" And Bartlett told the story exactly how he has always told it. And the science teacher ended up expecting him to be like, "Yeah, you know, I'm making this up to, you know, have some fun and stuff." But Bill didn't do that at all.
So he pushed that it was a real sighting and paranormal, all that stuff.
Yeah, he did not waver in this actually happened.
Right.
And so they interview all these people. The team determines it was not a hoax.
Okay. And this is MUFON and other qualified folks who are like, this is what they do.
And if you can remember, MUFON does not always try to explain what happened.
Yeah.
If they're like, this wasn't a hoax, this isn't made up, there's not anything. They just leave it as, we don't know what this was.
Yeah, they don't confirm alien. They just confirm that they could not disprove alien.
Yeah, that's where they leave it, is we don't know what happened, but we can't explain it.
Okay.
They did find, as far as they could tell, there were no drugs or alcohol involved with any of the three sightings, and that the sightings gradually leaked out. So it wasn't they all went into school
the next
and
day,
like coordinated, like telling everybody.
Yeah.
You know, they told their close friends who told their close friends and so on and so forth. And eventually this whole small town knows the story of these three folks seeing the same thing.
Right.
Having not really known each other previously.
Right, right. I remember high school, even if you kind of knew people, generally if you were 15, you might know the 17-year-old kids some, but you weren't hanging out together. You were kind of with your group and your grade.
Yeah. You would know of people without really knowing anything about them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where they're at.
So were there theories from that super group that came together to kind of investigate this, or did the town kind of have their own thoughts on it?
So the super group leaves just saying, you know, we can't explain this. This is something unusual that happened.
Yeah.
And then just over the years since then, different people have proposed different theories, and some have stuck more than others.
Okay.
And so let's go through some of these explanations.
Yeah, why don't you run me through it?
So you mentioned earlier, you know, was this some sort of animal that it could have been?
Yeah.
I found three proposed animals that this could have been. The first one is a snowy owl. Mm-hmm. This one was proposed by Joe Nickel. Joe Nickel is a famous paranormal skeptic.
Team Scully.
Yeah, Dana Scully. You've heard of her. I don't know if you've ever heard of James Randi.
Nah.
He had a whole TV show about if you can come on and prove that you have extrasensory abilities, then I'll give you $1 million.
Oh, okay.
And nobody ever won it. Mm-hmm. Joe Nickel is in that same vein. He was a famous paranormal skeptic. R.I.P. Joe Nickel. He actually passed away last month.
Oh, pour one out.
March 4th, 2025. So he proposed a snowy owl. It has large eyes, and he said the wings would appear as long, spindly arms.
Okay.
Snowy owl, I didn't go too in-depth with, because just right off the bat, doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know that I buy that one. The part I could see is the eyes, because I'm sure owls, you know, since they're nocturnal, probably have super reflective eyes or whatever. New moon. Okay, I can kind of meet you in the middle there, but
the eyes I can see. I can't see it crawling along a rock wall.
Yeah.
Leaning against a tree, walking down a road.
But driving by going 40, maybe you're talking to somebody, you know, side of your vision. Okay, maybe.
Maybe. Next one is an escaped or maybe released primate of some sort.
A lot of those in Massachusetts.
So I tried to look up the Barnum and Bailey circus schedule of 1977.
Yeah.
And you just can't find it. It's just not anywhere to see if maybe a train was going through town and a monkey jumped off or something.
Right.
Couldn't find anything like that. I did find that Massachusetts had just a couple years prior outlawed exotic pets. Mm-hmm. But if somebody owned a pet, it was grandfathered in.
Okay.
So it is possible that somebody in Dover, Massachusetts owned some sort of primate as a pet.
They couldn't make them sell Mr. Bananas. So he stuck around and maybe got loose.
What is Mr. Bananas?
Just what you would name your monkey. What would you name your monkey? I don't know.
Chester.
Chester the monkey?
Yeah, Chester monkey. In honor of Crunchy Cheetos, the champion.
There you go.
Could be a released primate. If you look this up online, multiple people suggest that it could be a type of primate called a loris. So I looked up lorises because they have really big eyes.
Yeah, I'm going to look this up while you run me through it.
And that's one of the defining features. They have really big eyes, and all of the other features on their heads are very small. So, you know, if you're driving by real quick, it might appear that they don't have a mouth or a nose or ears.
Oh, yeah, I've seen these guys. Yeah.
The issue with this one is the largest loris that exists on Earth is the Bengal slow loris. Mm-hmm. And it weighs 2.2 to 4.6 pounds and is 10 to 15 inches.
Just about every photo I see of it in someone's hands, it looks very small, like a kitten.
Yeah, so these are very small. It does not, you know, you're driving 40 miles an hour, there might be some size discrepancy, but you're not mixing up 15 inches for 4 feet.
Yeah, I don't think you would even clock it. I think would just...
That's too big of a bridge to gap for that one. Could it potentially be some larger type of primate? Maybe, but with the defining features being the big head, large eyes, I'm not so sure.
As far as I can see, the only thing that really lines up is the eyes.
Right. And then the last animal and the most popular for this story, mm-hmm. if you look this up and you start reading comments and what people are thinking, you're going to come across a lot of moose calf. It's a young moose.
Okay. And I've got a picture of that one right here.
Yeah, I sent you a picture of a young moose.
Yeah. Again, without the context, it's...
Yeah, without context, just a picture of an adolescent moose. So this is all over the place. It was a moose calf. They saw a moose baby, a young moose. Yeah, it was just a moose that they saw everywhere. It got to the point where I was like, maybe I don't even want to cover this case because everybody is so certain that this was a moose calf.
Right.
You know, if it's so obviously that, why would I cover this story? I am going to tell you definitively, this was not a moose calf. Now, Evan, are you ready to go down the moose hole with me?
Take me in, brother. Take me in.
So, to begin with, moose are very rare in eastern Massachusetts. So, right off the bat, they do appear from time to time, but it is very rare to see a moose in eastern Massachusetts.
Well, that could explain why they wouldn't be familiar with it.
So, maybe not familiar with it, right?
Yeah.
Now, next thing is the breeding season, or the rut for moose, mm-hmm. is mid-September to mid-October. And they have a gestation of 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they give birth in May, early June.
Okay.
So if they were to have witnessed this in April, that baby moose should be almost a year old, right?
Yeah.
So a newborn moose weighs 25 to 35 pounds. A year old moose is about 6 feet tall.
Oh, snap.
At the shoulder.
Okay.
So about 8 feet tall at the head.
Yeah. And their description was what, 3 to 4 feet?
Yeah, 4 feet tall. And for some reason, mm-hmm. it was really difficult to find how much a one-year-old moose weighs. I guess a lot of people aren't Googling that. But I was able to find that a five-month-old moose can weigh around 500 pounds.
It's a big boy.
Big boy, right? Now, let's suspend all of that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that is enough to write off moose as a possibility. But let's suspend everything I just told you about when moose are born and the gestation period and how big they get, mm-hmm. and all of that, right?
Yeah.
Let's say that maybe some moose were getting in a rut at a weird time of the year, right? And baby's born at the off season. Right.
Yeah.
And a moose is born, and it just happens that April 21st to 22nd, that moose is about 4 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
right size for this sighting. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is that the newborn moose and the mother stay together for about a year.
You'd probably see them together.
Yeah. They would be together. Usually, female moose are very passive, except they are famously defensive of their young.
Okay.
So even if we suspend all of the stuff about how big this moose would have been, and we just say, you know what? It's the right size.
Yeah.
To think that John Baxter is going to chase a baby moose down part of a road, down a slope, and have a standoff with it, and the mother moose is going to be like, oh, this is fine.
Yeah.
And like not react in any sort of way is just outrageous to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
unless it got like separated somehow, but I feel like it wouldn't survive long without mom, right?
Right. Or it would be hunched down somewhere making a distress call.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Right.
It's not like they get separated and then they get really bold and wander down streets.
Yeah. So to me, there is no way this was a moose calf.
I accept.
Nothing makes sense to me. I don't understand why everybody was so confident that it was a moose.
Well, they weren't Googling moose weights like some people. Right? So, yeah, well, you know, you went deeper.
Yeah.
You went deeper down the moose hole.
We went down the moose hole together.
It felt great.
So those are the three possible real animal explanations.
Yeah.
The next explanation is that this was a hoax.
That's where I was thinking when we first started. I was like, teenage kids, bored, hoax.
Right. And so next theory is that it was a hoax. These kids actually did know each other. They coordinated this in some sort of way and tried to get the story out to, you know, be popular or just have a cool story that people wanted to hear.
Initially, I was like, oh, these kids got together and planned this. But then the more I heard, I feel like the teacher and principal, especially a town this small, they'd be like, oh, yeah, they know each other. Clearly, they got together and planned this. But it sounds like all of them, they weren't a friend group. It doesn't sound like that. I feel like you would have noticed that at school, the three hanging out all the time.
Yeah. Somebody, you know, the principal, the science teacher, their parents.
Yeah, yeah.
Would have known these friends, they've been hanging out a lot. It wouldn't surprise me if they were conspiring something to come up with a story, right?
Right.
And so hoax, that's one of the theories.
So let me pose this though. I still think hoax is a possibility, just maybe not from them. It could be one person, you know, who was bored and went out to prank people, but they didn't know that. So they just went out and did their own thing as a solo venture.
So you're saying it was a fourth party,
yeah,
that dressed up as
something.
MG.
Yeah, MG. It was MG all along.
It was MG all along.
But yeah, like I think they're absolved. The initial three to four kids, depending on who you count, that was like riding the car or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't rule out the troublemaker at the school kind of doing their own thing outside of them.
Okay.
Just throwing that out there. Yeah. Not saying that's my committed theory. Yeah.
My kind of pushback on that theory would be, with all three sightings happening two different nights, that person perpetrating the hoax, one would have had to have really good makeup.
Yeah.
Or be, and possibly be naked.
Well, it was the 70s.
You know, right? Some sort of really convincing makeup on their face.
Yeah.
And they would have had to do the two the first night and then be like, you know what? That's not enough. And then get back into the makeup the next night and go back out and do it again.
Yeah. Well, and also my own caveat to that theory is, for how remote it sounds, and you would have to sit out there for like an hour to just see one car pass, maybe. But
so they would have had to been very
really
dedicated.
Committed. Yeah. But it could happen.
And then last two theories, got two more. Alien.
Right. Always an option.
Some sort of extraterrestrial. There was absolutely no reports of UFOs or flying saucers or anything in the sky. So none of that. But just the description of the creature, the pictures that are drawn of the creature, kind of looks alien-ish.
I mean, I guess part of like being an alien is coming from space. Are there stories where aliens come from somewhere local? You know what I mean? Like, is a UFO part of the rule book? Could an alien
like teleport?
Yeah, there you go. I'm just trying to think if there is some way to have that theory without like a ship sighting and stuff like that.
I think what you're getting at actually is the last theory.
Okay. What's that?
You have alien.
Yeah.
However they got there, we don't know, but it is some sort of like misplaced gray or something like that.
Yeah.
That maybe he was injured or I don't know, stranded, something. It was an alien.
Mm-hmm.
Next one that kind of ties into what you were getting at is that it was some sort of slip with an alternate dimension.
Oh, we're going deep here. Yeah, yeah.
We're going deep here.
Okay.
So it was some sort of rip in some sort of continuum, and something that is from another dimension that is not supposed to be here slipped through and ended up here. Whether that be an alien or some being that exists in this alternate dimension.
Yeah.
Something like that happened. There was some sort of event that occurred and it ended up being here when it shouldn't.
So how popular is that theory?
Well, you know, anytime you bring up something that's that far down the rabbit hole, you end up with people that are either all for it or totally against it.
Yeah. So you're hitting the fringes when you get.
Yeah, you're hitting the fringes with a theory like alternate dimension slip. Some people will be like, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into an episode at some point about Bigfoot. There's a lot of people out there that think Bigfoot is like a teleporting alternate dimension being.
That's interesting. I always thought it was just like a woodsman kind of theory.
Yeah, like a flesh and blood creature, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the other camp. And they sort of hate each other. That hate's a strong word.
Oh, but they hate
sort of, they feud with each other about, you know, what is Bigfoot?
Yeah.
But so alternate dimension, people are going to love or hate that theory. But that's the theory that it shouldn't be here. But it slipped through in some sort of way. I'll say if that's what happened, then it would explain the fact that this thing was seen over the course of 24, 25 hours and then never seen again.
Because
it's not supposed to exist in our space, couldn't survive, died, gone.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, does the dimension portal close and then it gets sucked back in? Or I can see why people don't like that theory. It does kind of feel like a cop-out.
Yeah.
Because it's like, go straight to the most abstract, unexplainable place you can, which is a tear in fabric and time, unprovable unless like somebody filmed it happening somehow.
Yeah.
So I get why one camp would be like, absolutely not. But I also think we can't totally disprove it, so you can't totally write it off either.
Yeah.
But it does feel like the, not the easiest way to explain it away, but also kind of, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to be like, I don't know, you just can't explain it because it was a tear in the fabric of our world. You're like, okay, I guess they saw it.
Like I said, I am intrigued by this story because of the scarcity of information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there had been 10 more sightings of this thing, or sightings from then all the way through now, then we would have a lot more information to go off of. But really, at the root, we have three kids that didn't know each other.
Yeah.
That saw the same thing over the course of two nights, and nobody's been able to explain it. So where do you land on this one?
So, well, I want to hear your take first on this one. So, because I feel like each theory you gave me in other episodes, you've left it pretty open. I feel like you don't feel like you've heard a satisfactory explanation yet. Because you kind of discounted everything you heard so
far. You're
dead
on.
It sounds like.
You're dead on.
Yeah.
I have not heard a theory on this one that I like.
So do you have one of your own, or is that part of the draw to this one?
Part of me wants to say that this was a hoax,
mm-hmm.
that the three kids were all in on it, and you know, Bill Bartlett was an artist, so he immediately ran home and drew the thing, and you know, he's a fine artist now, but it is still his most famous work that he's ever done.
Mm-hmm.
If you look him up, you're going to find that picture before you find any of his fine art paintings. And so maybe it was something to do with that. They were bored. It was spring break. They figured they'd have some fun and concoct this story. And then completely outside of their control, this world famous cryptid researcher steps in and the whole thing blows up. But the issue with that is them not knowing each other,
yeah,
before the events happened. And like you said, if this was a hoax, then they had to have like been meeting in secret to concoct the hoax, because like their parents would have known, the teachers, the principals, somebody in the town would have come out and been like, well, I saw those three hanging out together just the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody would have come out with that. And so I kind of land where MUFON is on this one. I think they saw something, but I just have no idea what that could have been.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know. I honestly, like when we started, I was thinking these kids are in on a hoax, and I still think I'm kind of coming back to that. I mean, the fact that it's like two kids who could kind of draw, I mean, there is enough of an art link there. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I wasn't born in the 70s, but I feel like it was a little more taboo to be like an art kid back in the day. So could kind of hit it off somewhere, even if they aren't the same age. But, you know, maybe they're just at like a party, underage drinking or whatever. Like, so maybe they just like started chatting and then they were both into the same thing. Even if they weren't friends, maybe circumstance brought them together enough to concoct this idea and nobody would think twice about it because it's a party, everybody's mingling, whatever. I don't know. I guess like everybody's pretty spread out and stuff in this town, but in my head, that means there'd be like the one party everybody goes to. So maybe they were talking and just like this plan just kind of started snowballing into this.
Okay.
So I'm making a lot of assumptions there, but I think it's because I'm in a similar boat as you. I don't really know how to explain it. You talked me out of the moose calf theory, which
it was not seems a moose.
To be the leading one. But I don't know, for some reason, the two art kids to draw pretty close to the same thing is like the thing I keep coming back to.
So you think the art link is the giveaway?
Yeah, it's always the nerds working together.
And then how do you wrap Abby Bradham into it? She was just at the party too, and they saw her like listening in. She was like, you gotta let me in on this or I'm gonna give you away.
Or maybe her boyfriend is like one of the art kids, or maybe like they decided to concoct the sightings and then they only needed to create one. And then between them and one real sighting, they've got enough gravity to kind of give this thing some legs.
Okay. So
again, writing a story for them at this point. But just the drawings being so similar, being two art kids, it's a lot of overlap to be chance. But to your point, that could be that they saw something that was in the area, unexplainable, alien or otherwise.
Okay. So it sounds like, and this might be a monumental moment, you are open to the possibility that they maybe could have seen something strange.
I think they could have seen something they can't explain. I think if we teleported back with a flashlight, we would go, oh, it was a moose calf. David's wrong.
It wasn't a moose calf.
That's why I have like my mind map going on the wall of like, and then they met at a party.
I thought I had you for a minute. For like 10 seconds, I thought I had you believing in the paranormal.
You know, it's a knee-jerk reaction. So I'm getting there. You're slowly pulling me over to the moose hole side. So
we're gonna put that on a t-shirt when we open a merch store.
Take me into the moose hole.
Take me into the moose hole. We're gonna have Oddity Archive hoodies. We're gonna have our dual use wine bottle holders.
Yep.
And we're gonna have moose hole shirts.
Yeah. I mean, what else do we need?
That's about it.
I mean, we did kind of, even if from different angles, kind of hit the same conclusion, sort of.
Sort of, kind of.
I feel like.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, we can't explain it, and we're trying to find our own ways to make it make some sense, or
yeah,
or not.
This is, like I said, this is a case I don't think there is a good answer for. So if anybody listening, you know, maybe picked up on something that we talked about or knows something else about this case that we didn't cover, you know, reach out. I want to hear what y'all think the Dover Demon is or isn't, because I want answers.
Yeah, especially for people coming in fresh, I'd like to kind of hear what the initial take is, because I don't think we have a very good answer.
No, I don't think we do. So yeah, reach out to us. You can email me at oddityarchivepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us at Oddity Archive Podcast on Instagram. We'll have a post for this episode, and you know,
that's got the two drawings that I think are my smoking gun. But it does kind of help give you a framing for the episode. And it also has the moose calf that, you know.
Moose calf. It wasn't a moose calf.
It definitely wasn't a moose calf.
Yeah, drop a comment on that post and let us know what you think. Let us know what you think of the podcast in general. And, you know, I appreciate everybody out there that's listening to this, has listened to past episodes.
For sure.
If you like what you hear, tell one other person about the podcast. That would be a huge favor for us, and I know we'd greatly appreciate it.
Expand the moose hole.
Expand the moose hole. And we're
all right, should we close out on that?
I am David Stuhldreher, creator and host. The show is edited by my co-host, Evan Miller. All original music created by Sean Bullock. You can follow him at Sean Bullock Video on Instagram. All original artwork done by Tanis. Follow her at Tanis Tattoos on Instagram as well. Thank you for listening.